The first thing that came to my mind was you were a practicing veterinarian and you were classically trained like all veterinarians are, whether they decide to follow that holistic path or not, which comes later and they further their education or their knowledge. You were right on the same page with the rest of the veterinarians who believe that everything you were taught in school, the pet food industry typically is who teaches you the nutrition you learn. So you really thought that that nutrition was really encapsulated in those little nuggets that come in those paper bags or in the cans, and that was sufficient for their health because it was scientifically balanced and formulated. However, you detoured from that at some point in your career. But what was interesting, before you did, you were actually working with a colleague, Dr. Johann, on formulating your own packaged brand of pet food, which you really thought was going to be a bomb, to use a modern vernacular. But something changed for you. What happened?
Well, before I start, would you mind if I just do a special tribute to Dr. Tom Lonsdale? Because I think perhaps the central issue tonight could be the fact that I met with Dr. Tom Lonsdale in the United Kingdom. And I'm going to just correct a few things, and that's not to correct you, Kim. It's just a little bit different, or perhaps give you a better perspective of exactly what happened to me and why I ended up in the United Kingdom. Yes, initially I was fully conditioned and almost indoctrinated by the technology and things that you learn at school, because you go into vet school with a clean slate or basically with an open mind. And they then offer you the courses that you go through, and you try to make sure that you pass the exams or at least perform to a reasonable extent. But unfortunately, in that process, I think we get to a point where we are really mind controlled to a large extent. However, in my third year, I got to the point where I realized that periodontal disease, specifically in dogs and cats, is a major problem and that it needs addressed. But my focus was distracted. I was so focused on the technological side or the technical side of addressing this problem that I never found the cause. I never got to the point or to a time in my life where I could sit down and discern or ask myself a few tough questions and say, well, where does it originate in the first place? I was very keen to take care of it. And in my third year, I decided I will basically focus on veterinary dentistry. So my history in South Africa was that of a veterinary dentist. I was the only practicing or private practicing veterinary dentist in South Africa since 1990. And I only went to the United Kingdom in 2002. However, the United Kingdom and the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons, in their wisdom, did not recognize my discipline. They basically recognized me simply as a veterinary surgeon. So I tried to work as a veterinary dentist in an allopathic veterinary practice where I had the responsibilities of a veterinary surgeon, and where this tidal wave of pathology hit me from the first I walked into the practice. So essentially that was the paradigm shift when I was struck with this incredible level of pathology, especially in cats, and not just dental disease, but the systemic manifestations of this whole syndrome that seem, at this point in time, seem that people don't recognize or owners don't recognize, and vets are reluctant to address from a cause perspective. They love the fact that the syndromes are there, and they do it from a fiscal perspective and run from that. So what I would like to do, if time allows, to get to the duality of this whole situation, that we look at industry tonight specifically versus nature, because the topic is the carnivore truth about our cats and dogs. And as far as I'm concerned, embedded in that statement is natural law. If we can get to the point where we recognize natural law in what is happening to our cats and dogs, hopefully that will give people the incentive to recognize what is happening in industry as the fiction it is, and then we can dispel it with the natural law situation and work it from there. If that's okay. Right with you, how does that sound?
That's great. Actually, what you just said was identifying, in a sense, the cause. Part of it is there's been a massive marketing campaign to the public to encourage them to feed the so-called scientifically balanced and nutritious food in a bag that comes in an overcooked dry kernel. Then they also discovered it would be really great if the veterinarians would support that same cause and supply the veterinarians with a good portion of income to encourage them to do so, while they infiltrated the veterinary schools to indoctrinate the vets. That actually, from my perspective, I think that's the main main root cause. It has nothing to do with animal health or carnivore health.
Correct. Could we just go a little bit further back? I just want to go back because I agree fully with what you're saying, but I think we need to truly tonight, if we can zone down or really drill down to the original cause of all this or this whole quagmire, I think we will all walk away feeling that we achieved something. In 1790, Mayor Amschel Rothschild stated, "Let me issue and control a nation's money, and I care not who writes the laws." Now, every veterinarian that is registered with the authorities, whether anywhere, whether it's in the United States or in South Africa or in the United Kingdom, they are basically bound by statutory legislation. Very few vets understand what statutory means. And secondly, they also often, when the term legislation comes in, they go blank. Now, in essence, what this man has done, he's basically taken control of a nation's money and therefore have a way to manipulate a system that has basically impacted all of our lives even today as I speak. And essentially what they've done is, let me give you the perspective of the founder of the EU currency system. He said, "Slavery is but the owning of labor and carries with it the care of the laborers, while the European plan, the capital, shall control the labor by controlling wages." So essentially this plan or this methodology corrupted our social, scientific and technological integrity to the point of virtual no return, and where politics and religion mainly keep people enslaved and in check with superstitious ignorance, and they divorce them from nation or from nature with this legal fictional corporate fascism we find ourselves in at this point in time. And if vets think I'm talking very serious or very strong language, I want them to look at their title, what that title really means. First of all, there's doctor in front of it, and behind it is normally in America a DVM, and in South Africa or in the United Kingdom a BVAC or a MRCVS, member of the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons. And that's basically a title, and that is a title that basically allow these authorities to act against you as a human being through statutory legislation and basically control you. And we need to somehow get to the point, first of all, to recognize that. And secondly, we then only need to address the social attributes that contribute to this current conduct, which is not focusing on the animal's welfare, but survival. And using something like the pet food industry in order to oil these wheels of the fiscal system as it go on. And especially where it concerns our animals, we have to do this right now. Could I share with you what happened to me as far as the pet food industry is concerned, just to come back to my history?
Yeah.
Because I did not develop it for myself. I was working with a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, who was doing it as his business. That was his enterprise. He basically asked me to assist and to do some field work on his behalf. I was basically just following the technical guidelines of these companies. It's like looking at the recipe when you bake a cake. We looked at the formulations. We looked at the technical and the so-called scientific formulations and essentially did the whole program according to that. But to my astonishment, when we got to the point where this concoction was cooked up, the animals wouldn't eat it. And that essentially brought us to a point where there was a problem. We had to deal with it. And somehow that was bridged over with this thing that they call digest, that you spray over the food and you can basically spray it onto cardbox and these animals would eat it. And that basically brought it into the perspective where it was accepted in the veterinary profession. The animals accepted from a feeding perspective. They started to eat it and it just went out of control. And today it is literally out of control. Now, in order to understand this whole system, there's four specific issues that I want to address, if you will allow me, and then perhaps we can discuss that a little bit further. Mm-hmm. If we look at the veterinary practice, what is really going on as the bulk or the backbone of a veterinary practice? And the first one that I want to call is the need for cyclical consumption, and not sick, cyclical. There's a cyclical consumption going on continuously. It's either vaccines or it's topical and systemic parasite medications. What's chronic medication, especially when I was in the United Kingdom, chronic medication for hormonal replacement, arthritis, skin problems, etc. And then especially, and you called it the other day, I think it's to CMO or CMA.
CYA. CYA.
Cover something, or to make sure that you don't get attacked from a different source.
Cover your backside, right.
Yes, especially blood works. There are literally thousands of liters of blood spun off every single day for useless hematological assessments, where if you do a proper clinical examination with your five senses and you know what you're looking for and you know what you're doing and you lose the fear of litigation, that animal's blood can stay in its system. And then you've got regular health checks, which I personally feel should be called regular disease checks, because it's basically there as a forefront or the beginning to book them in for either ultrasounds or x-rays dental, as they mentioned.
Or more vaccines.
Behavioral or more vaccines. Or even then, the selling of the food. Discussions on your puppy needs to go over onto a new set of food, and you can accept this as the best scientifically formulated and whatever the case might be. So you end up in the cyclical consumption situation, and then they end up treating these resulting systemic syndromes that they create in the first place. And again, I'm not, and I hope it doesn't come over critical. I'm not critical. I'm trying to generically put forward a system that we need to acknowledge. If we can acknowledge the system, we can do something about it. There's no criticism. I was the biggest culprit. I was part of it. And I'm going to explain as we go along how it affects us and how we can address it. This is now the initial bad part of it, or the bad news, but we'll get through it. I just want to follow through, if you will allow me. Mm-hmm. So we get to this point where they have this on and on. There's no other way, because the employer needs to pay the wages to the employee, which is your support staff, who sells a service to the consumer for profit. And you end up with clients, especially now with a credit crunch, with less and less dispensable income. So the pressure on these people are absolutely immense. So essentially, from a natural perspective, you have to either relinquish your own principles or you're going to die. You need to find, and I was many times in that position that I said thank you for a case that came in when I was still in South Africa, when I just started off, in order to assist me to keep my doors open for the next day. Because I started off from a practice. I didn't buy existing practice. I started with a brand new practice, with opening the doors on the first day and running my clients through. So I was guilty of that as well. But if you look at the cycle, the employer that needs to pay the wages to his employee or his receptionist, who then needs to service the customer, we're dealing basically with classifications of a monetary payment to a monetary system that is basically enslaving us all. And you have to buy the goods or the services for their own survival, and this system just keeps on perpetuating indefinitely.
Yes.
Now, if that consumption would stop in a veterinary practice today, the whole system collapses. Then you end up in a situation, and the next one is the abundance of scarcity. Now, these are economic definitions that they use in ordinary economics that you can basically put into a veterinary practice, because support staff gets paid a salary that is often equivalent to life support. And I'm referring here to emergency life support. I'm not talking about life support, because most of these poor people cannot get through the end of the month. And you were both in those positions. Am I overcritical, or do you agree that most people are paid just?
Totally agree.
I will add to that we did the bulk of the work.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. But they are paid just enough that they don't get lost, that they don't go and look for something else. They stay in a situation where it's almost quiet desperation. You live a life of quiet desperation. You want to go, but the love for the animals and your duty and everything that you hold high and your integrity keeps you there. But by the middle of the month, people start to worry because they can't get through the month. So you end up where you are governed by your dispensable income. And so many animals, and there are just so many alive animals to perform some sort of a procedure without raising suspicion. So you are continuously filtering your own values out in order to keep this interest, this industrial interest, up and going. And I think we all need a break. I took a break. And the shows that I did with you previously is basically testament of that, how I made a choice and I simply walked away. And I said, enough is enough.
Jeannie and I both walked away from veterinary medicine also. However, now we're back from this perspective, and it has been a battle, because we're still in it for the animals, as are you, Dr. Johan. However, we're up against that big industrial machine. What they do, if they cannot refute what we say and we know to be true, they then seek to discredit our personal integrity and our personal character. So that's the other thing. So they take the subject matter away from the topic at hand, whether it be vaccines or kibble or whatever that we're doing for the animal's sake, and direct it back onto us personally. So if we engage that, then we're allowing them to suck the very life breath from us, but we don't engage it.
Right.
Exactly. That's a very valid point. And that tells you that we need to do something. You need an alternative. But, and before we get to the full alternative, I just want to finish off these identifying issues, because if we can identify them all and keep them focused or keep them highlighted, the fear will disappear. Again, the fear of loss is always greater than the desire to gain. Mm-hmm. It's senseless to sit here and try and give you a pep talk. We need to talk about the fear of loss. And we need to consider that people often hear, but they don't necessarily listen.
Right.
There might be someone that is busy with something else, or there's children in the background, and they listen to what we're saying, or they're hearing it, but they're not necessarily listening. But hopefully something tonight will trigger to say, hang on, I need to research this, or I need to go further and consider what this man has said, and perhaps read a little bit further, and it might just click in, and then you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, unfortunately or sadly, we discover the right things, but often in the wrong order. If I discovered the right things in the past, I would never have gone to the United Kingdom. But I went to the United Kingdom, and I discovered the right things, but it was in the wrong order. And it struck me like a tidal wave, but it also assisted me to jolt myself out of my ignorance, my superstitious ignorance, and get to a point to say, I need to inform myself. I need to find something or somebody to assist me to overcome this problem, because it's unattainable. I couldn't handle it. It was too much. And up came Tom Lonsdale and Tom Lonsdale's work. Now, what intrigues me is the fact that even though I profess that, or I bring it out as something that should be positive, people still avoid that book like a plague.
Rami DeBone's book, Rami DeBone's,
yes,
com,
right.
As a matter of fact, they avoid it because what you just said, the fear of loss is bigger or greater than the desire for gain, because I've spent $100,000 on an education that I expect to be in practicing making that money back and a multitude more. And when you pull that foundation out from under me and show me the bare bones truth, if you will, the raw meaty bones truth, what do I do as
right.
a veterinarian?
Exactly.
Where's somebody gonna come from?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, that brings us to the concept that they call in economics planned obsolescence. Now, housewives will know that very well. You buy a new washing machine, and before the warranty expires, the machine expires. Or just after the warranty expires, the machine expires. And say, now, how did this happen? It's basically 3 weeks after the warranty expired, and there the machine goes. Well, it was planned. Because the deliberate withholding of that efficiency, so that your product in the question breaks down respectively very fast. Again, they do it without raising much suspicion. Now, how do we apply this to the veterinary profession? Obviously, since the late 80s and the early 90s, the veterinary profession, and I'm talking in terms of the South African veterinary profession, was at a serious crossroads. In fact, was it not for the fact that parvo broke out, what they referred to as parvoviral infections, our profession would have been completely different than it is today. And secondly, then they started pushing this marketing situation or this merchandise mentality that eventually turned the face of the profession, and I think almost inevitably to a point where it's almost irrecoverable. Except Tom Lonsdale came on the scene and he threw a few cats in between the pigeons. Because the deliberate withholding of this efficiency is what keeps them in business. If you imagine, if we could turn the efficiency of getting 87% of all periodontal disease disappeared overnight, what is it going to take to do that? And it's very simple, but it's so simple it repels the mind. And people in the profession will say, but what am I going to live off? I'm not trained to do anything else than what I do at this point in time. So you end up with a deliberate planned obsolescence where they say, well, you know what? I'm going to turn a blind eye to that and I'm just going to carry on, because we have a priority for profit. And that is the underlying situation. And you need to ask yourself, the priority for profit to whom? The principals, the pharmaceutical industry, the pet food industry, the industry that supplies all this technological advances in the technology itself, gastroscopic, fluoroscopes, x-ray machines, everything that you go for, then you end up with fiscal manipulation. Or you get someone like Ben Bernanke, who walks up and decides he's going to raise interest or drop it down, or you're going to have this bubble and that bubble, and you end up with inflation and deflation, and what you have now is stagflation. And then what do you do then? How do you get people through your doors? Do you start another campaign? And you start another campaign, you say, well, let's put the fear-mongering further, since people are now fearful of the so-called swine flu. Now let's decide if we're going to get the dogs also to contract the same thing, and let's create something else, and we create a new nice vaccine, and we put that into it, because now we can do also some fiscal manipulation.
The veterinarian who created that one has a guaranteed ongoing income through fear-mongering with the patents that she now owns on that particular vaccine she just created.
Yes.
Isn't that
now,
nice?
Right. Now, if we understand, if we can comprehend that greed and competition are not the result of an immutable human temperament, it's not born into us. Greed and fear of scarcity are in fact being created, and it's amplified by the system, this monetary system that we've basically gone, we became slaves of. The whole profession. I'm not in a business. I'm in a profession. And therefore, I need to, and this is what Tom's work helped me with, literally earthed me back to the fundamental laws of nature. And I'm going to get to it a bit later. You must tell me how our time is.
I just want to say something, re-interject right here, Dr. Hans. You're a veterinarian and you learn a variety of species. However, what captured you and Dr. Lonsdale at the top of the very top of the food chain was the carnivore, because in my opinion, the carnivore is having the worst thrust upon them.
Precisely.
Horses have their own whole other thing. But what is being done to the carnivores in the name of veterinary profession, of this veterinary profession, of this veterinary industry, is a travesty. And that's why you and Dr. Lonsdale stand at the pinnacle, at the top of the food chain with these carnivores, standing in the gap for them. So now you have the floor. I just had to say that.
Well, it ties in with what I wanted to just end off with as far as the fiscal manipulation side is concerned, is that the direct consequence of that is that we have to literally fight with each other in order to survive. And vets are greedy. And I'm not, again, I'm not being facetious. I'm not trying to treat them with contempt. I'm using greedy as a term to express a condition. And what I'm trying to say is they don't wish to lose a single client to another vet. Do you agree with that? Or am I from another planet?
No, no. You're not.
Vets don't like to lose clients to another vet. And yet we refer to each other as colleagues. You are my colleagues. I have no fear of losing any vested interest or any interest or equity to any of you two, because as far as I'm concerned, we are a team that augment each other. So why on earth should
I don't know, Jeannie and I are that way also, Dr. Johan. We don't have any fear. We know when they come to us, it's not taking away anything from a veterinarian. It might take away some of their income in the sense that they won't. We encourage our clients to listen to exactly what you're teaching today.
But what I'm trying to say is, if you consider that, can we just go a little bit deep on that specific thing? Because we'll find that we keep on trapping ourselves into a hamster wheel.
Yeah.
There is a fear of loss. The fear of loss that vets have, that they might lose a client to someone else, in exactly the same manner as you just explained regarding you or Jeannie, mm-hmm. is basically preventing them from using logical reason or logical reasoning because of prejudice. So the fiscal-driven slavery is again potentiated and amplified, and that there will be always, always be conflict unless we turn that around and unless we find the offensiveness of that despicable enough to say, I've had enough of it. And that's what I've done. The moment I said, I've had enough of this and I stepped out of it, immediately things changed. I got to a point where I could literally discern, I could distinguish the natural law, compassion and love and empathy came back, and a clarity of reason came back. And I don't need to sit here opinionated and say to you, I'm telling you this is how we do it. I'm sharing with you what happened to me, how it changed my life, how it changed my perspective, how it changed my philosophy, how it changed my attitude and my actions and the results that came from it. And that's where we're going to end later if we look at the scientific method. Very few people understand what the scientific method really means.
Mm-hmm.
But they are euphemisms. And if there's any country in the world that love euphemisms, I think it's Americans. And you know me both. Again, it's not criticism. I love Americans. I despise corporatism, but I love Americans. But they love terminology that sounds like an euphemism. You look at war, what they do is, and they say, oh, what is the bottom line of war? It's basically there for industrial profit, period. There's no other way. But it's called resource acquisition. When they go steal someone else's raw resources or their physical resources, they call it resource acquisition. Essentially, it's theft. Or they call it strategic political, oh, I'm falling over my own tongue, geopolitical alignment, which is insurgents. And then they call the people who defend themselves and their families, they call them insurgents. Mm. It's a double speak and a situation that is despicable. So we need to create some balance. So how are we going to create balance? We can only create balance if we go back and say, fine, let's look at the essence of an atom. You look at attraction and intent and neutrality, which equals balance. And you find that there's a proton, there's an electron, and there's a neutron that creates a balance or dynamic equilibrium.
My mind is thinking really crazy here, Johan, and you'll have to just humor me. But what came to my mind when you said, when you talked about that perfect synergy of balance was then how can we scientifically say anything that we have put into a bag processed for an animal, a carnivore, could be called balance?
Exactly. Now, yes. So what we need to understand and apply the scientific method. Now, what is the scientific method? Well, essentially, if we can get to the point where you say, all right, we're going to the application of the scientific method for social concern, if we can apply that scientific method for our social concern, the environmental concern, and for our animals, then obviously it's going to get so obvious and in your face that you will understand and you will walk away from it. And that's what I think in the last two times that I've been with you, I basically just said, I'm walking away from it. I don't need to fight them. I don't need to discredit anybody, but I'm just walking away from it. Because nature has its own set of rules, but it does not have the capacity to recognize or care about what you or myself or anyone else wants to believe or believe. It only expresses itself. So we have a situation where you either recognize a new idea and say, wow, why haven't I thought about this before? Or you sit with a problem that needs to be solved. And this is what Tom managed. When I worked through Raw Meaty Bones, Work Wonders was a different story. Work Wonders was almost, to me, just a recap of what he's already done, but the essence of that work lies in Raw Meaty Bones. And that basically challenges you to, first of all, see a new idea coming towards you and embrace it, or say, well, I have a current problem. Could I use this new information to solve this problem? And therefore, number two, it automatically goes into the second one to say, well, I'm going to use some logical reasoning and create a hypothesis or a postulate or a new philosophy. And then what do? Then the last one is then basically to say, all right, now we have a new hypothesis and now we're going to take it somewhere and we're going to deal with it in a way where there is absolutely no prejudice. And we're going to test that in the physical world through observation without that prejudice. And again, mm-hmm. Now we go back to the pet food industry. Does that happen? And the answer is no. There's a fiscal interest, there is prejudice, and it's been controlled and it's been manipulated, and it's people in white jackets standing in labs, and they throw things down to a reductionist perspective, and they say, well, there you are. And they dress it up in the nice colors or whatever the case might be, and essentially it destroys these animals, their lives. And this was essentially what made me turn around, the combination of both, that I got to the point where I understood that I have to go back and consider the natural laws, and especially nothing more amplified it than the cats, the obligate carnivores, especially in the United Kingdom. When they are curfewed and they are not allowed to hunt, they cannot replenish their foodstuffs, they're nocturnal animals, they do not do what they normally do, and it was a culture shock to the highest extreme. And that got me to a point where I knew I have to now find solutions for this, and I need to convey it to these customers or to my clients. And essentially, that is where I got the second lease on life when I was allowed discussion with you to basically just voice my opinion and share with you what has happened to me and find the allegiance and also the sense of belonging to know that, yes, we can if we focus on the natural laws, we can then have a far greater impact than standing in the consult room and seeing a new client every 10 minutes with an animal with basically the same syndrome that we saw just 10 minutes ago.
And over and over and over again, here's the thing that disturbs me the most, Dr. Johann. We call ourselves, we love our animals. In fact, I hear people say all the time, oh, they're like my baby. The first thing, and I think the first line of respect that we can when we start to come out of the cloud of this propaganda that we've been inundated with is that they are animals. And that's where we begin to respect them as such. They're animals. And then they're a dog or a breed and then our so-called baby. They're our friend, but I mean, they tolerate what we have subjected them to and they suffer in their silence and we throw a drug and a surgery and more drugs and more pesticides on top of them and then a food that we wouldn't feed to. I mean, I would never consider feeding that to my child day after day after day, meal after meal after meal. And we call that love. And all in the name of economics. What's convenient for me, I have a furry little companion to make me feel good. And the veterinarian is saying, and I have a furry little being that I can put forth my professional face with my stethoscope around my neck and say how much I know to help your pet. And this animal is stuck right smack in the middle with both opposing forces. I mean, we may as well draw and quarter them. That'd be more humane.
Well, they become literally victims on like an offer. Someone, it's a sacrificial offer at the end.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But again, there's a common denominator. The common denominator is the social destruction that's been imposed on us since 1790, and where we've basically became slaves. And we don't understand it. When you look at slavery, people say slavery has been abolished. It's not. They've just turned it to servitude, and they called it, and they basically concealed it with statutory legislation, and you go to university on your free will, you become a vet. In fact, people literally put themselves through tremendous pressure and effort to do that, and they rightly so. They're proud of it. But what you don't realize is that you've basically taken you out of the private venue. You've lost, you basically cut the connection with nature, and you've put yourself literally into what they call a republic. You've been republiced back into a public venue.
Oh, you know how they say it in Star Trek? The Borg. The Borg have assimilated you. You've been assimilated into the machine. That's what happened.
Yes. Yes, and Tim, we're at the point now in our collective consciousness and I think humanity where we don't have a choice but to really consider things now very carefully before we go any further because we are on a self-destruct path. And I'm not a doomsayer. I'm saying we need to find an alternative and we have an alternative right now. And it lies in nature. And I'm coming back to the topic of tonight, the truth in the dogs and the cats. And they show us. They showed me. Not by virtual speech or by verbal speech, but by showing me what they endure in order to be our companions.
Mm-hmm.
And
they do.
Unless we recognize that. And when we do, and people, and especially the profession, realizes that there is an alternative. We can do it today. If people collectively decide enough is enough, it stops today. In fact, would you mind if I share something else with you? Roger Meacock, very good friend of mine and a colleague as a veterinary surgeon, has basically sent Hill's Pet Nutrition a statement of truth or an affidavit of truth. The United Kingdom apparently says it's illegal to do an affidavit. They call it a statement of truth. But essentially, Roger went and he saw it, or he basically took the premise that they said Hill's is vet's first choice, which certainly is not mine. That's why I call myself a veterinary dentist or a naturopath, as I've been called recently by my two other colleagues. You put them on notice that first of all, and I hope the Hill's Nutrition in the US listened to this as well, they basically implied that there's a trademark on vet's first choice, and he found that it's not. So that's industrial fraud.
Yeah.
And secondly, he's not taking them to class action court case where there's conflict. He said, fine, now we have an agreement. You basically have an implied agreement to use my name and my endorsement, so I'm going to send you a bill. And that's now what's going to happen. We're going to take these corporations that has now basically became so-called, and they are not powerful. They create the impression that they're powerful by sponsoring all these congressional meetings and all the symposiums and everything that goes with it. I'm walking away from it. I don't want them in my life any longer. I don't know how else to put it, but their day is over. The carte blanche is over. And as a corporate institution that basically sacrifices these animals on a daily basis, their days are counted. And I don't need to fight them. Someone else is going to find the justice and do it to them. I've found an alternative. I've walked away from it. And thank goodness there's something called the internet where we can use an alternative medium of communication to share these principles, and that we have the principles at our fingertips and in our hearts and in our minds and with discernment to share that with owners or carers of animals in such a way that it will reduce these syndromes and it will reduce the cost that they incur on a yearly basis. And it's going to happen literally overnight. But this, it might take a few years, but I believe it's going to be in my lifetime. I'm not going to walk away and say, well, I never saw the promised land. Because what you've started with this discussions and all the work and the energy that you've put into this, and people like Tom that basically sacrificed his professional career in order to bring this truth out and being ridiculed and ostracized to the 10th degree, it's over. It's obnoxious and deceptive enough that people with any sense of reality can almost immediately recognize it for what it is, and that's why they lose their clientele base and why they become desperate. So we're literally at the threshold of something incredible, and this is what I would like to start closing off with. I'm not a doomsayer. To the contrary, I have never been more excited to be alive and to be making a contribution in the profession the way I do now, because I believe we are now at the threshold. And in fact, there was a new communication system launched today in your country. It's basically just the beginning. And I believe we're going to have a virtual university, an internet university or cyber university, call it what you want, a virtual university with people in so many numbers that you will not be able to find a venue on this planet that will be big enough to house them, because we can now use applied technology to get into the resources of what we need and take the scientific method and the natural law and apply it, and the fiction is going to disappear. In fact, it cannot stand it. It's like being hit by a thunderbolt.
Jeannie and I always say the truth always wills out, no matter how hard you try to squash it and keep it down. However it's done, it eventually wills out. And I think that's what you're saying in your usual eloquent way, Dr. Johann, and talking a lot about the Band-Aid or the status quo, but there is a solution.
Yeah.
We were talking about food assimilation of phytonutrients, brought up this question about, you know, all of a sudden we're being told not to feed raw meat because there's new pathogens, okay, for us to be concerning ourselves with. And we want to address that. You and I and Jeannie talked about gluconeogenesis process that happens in the carnivore and the metabolic cycles and what happens to the pancreas if we continue with the status quo. So all of those things are things that we're going to want to address in depth in part two, so that people can hear that there is not only a vital, natural solution, but it's a must.
Right.
If we're going to call ourselves professed animal lovers and feel like we have a right to have these animals in our lives, then it is our duty to heed these things and to implement them in our lives. And also, we want to take away the fear of this raw, meaty bone stuff that's being propagated against because of what you just said, because the machine wants to keep their economic power, hold sway over all the pet owners with the food and with the vaccines and with all of it, the whole mess. And we're going to show them how to be empowered by unlearning all that and taking back control.
Amen.
And the thing is that it's actually easier to feed this way,
yes,
and to care for our animals
it's
according to their nature.
It's not rocket science.
It's not. Unfortunately, there's so much disinformation out that people are confused. We hope to totally knock down the walls of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Confusion is based in fear.
Right.
And when you can look at this logically, as Dr. Johann unfolds this as beautifully as he does, it's simple. It's not rocket science. It's not difficult. It's a choice. But I don't think it's a choice that we have the right. It's our choice, certainly, but is it for the animals? Don't they have a right to choose what they would eat naturally?
Mm.
If we've invited them into our homes, shouldn't they be respected enough to give them what their bodies need to thrive, what they were designed to eat, not what we want them to eat because it appeals to us and our sense of convenience and our sense of apathy, laziness.
Yes, that too.
And Dr. Johann, I know that you're sitting there listening and absorbing because you're like a sponge.
Thank you. Well,
nothing falls off of you. You take it all in and you just assimilate it. Actually, what's going on in the metabolic process, there's no way we can deny the truth of that the dogs and cats are carnivores. And I have to state this. Dogs are not omnivores. We're going to talk about that. They have not evolved into omnivores. Scavenger carnivores, my favorite thing to say nowadays is they're buzzards on four legs with fur.
And then exactly. They're cats.
Cats are obligates.
Obligates, right.
That's even higher because that means they're obligated to eat fresh, raw meat and bone daily.
So we're going to get into all of that as well.
Yes. Yeah, you've got to stay tuned because that's part where we bring in not just this whole what's going on in the body, that somebody like Dr. Johann, who is so well-trained, and but he cares about these animals and can explain it to you in terms that we normally don't. And also that you can then give the solution, and the solution is really simple. I would suggest everybody go home and pick up copies of Work Wonders, Feed Your Dog Raw Meaty Bones, and also Raw Meaty Bones Promote Health by Dr. Tom Lonsdale. Visit his website at rawmeatybones.com, and you can also find those same books on Amazon.com. Don't let that not be something you don't do. At least read Work Wonders so that you can be prepared.
Well, in a nutshell, what I would ask, especially since what we discussed tonight, is to ask clients to consider twice before they buy anything for their animals. If they can find it out of nature, animals in nature take what they need.
Carnivores are at the top of the food chain. We're going to elaborate on that more next time. Their jaws do not, their hinge jaws, up and down, open, shut like an alligator. They don't sideways grind like a horse or a cow or any other herbivore, and certainly not an omnivore.
Right.
You know, dogs
yes,
are
but
often,
mandatory, I beg your pardon, I interrupted you, but mandatory will disappear into voluntary compliance once people inform themselves with knowledge. Once you inform yourself and you delve into the knowledge, and it's a process. Nothing is stagnant. We are things that we now consider as a truth might in 15 or 20 years be seen as totally ridiculous. I'm not talking about an established belief system. I'm talking about progression, that we look at nature, that we critically evaluate, that we consider things to look at the next possible probability and work according to that, but use nature as our guiding and basically yardstick to use the universal laws rather than these statutory, paper-made, book-made laws that are literally crumbling as we speak. And there is no better time to live and no more exciting time. And we are there to enjoy our animals. And people should not feel guilty. But all I'm asking is inform yourself, which I'm doing as well. I spend 8-10 hours a day reading and studying and progressing myself. And it is a journey. We are all on a journey and we are all interlinked. We are all interdependent and we are all one. So if you hurt a cat or a dog, you hurt yourself in essence. I don't need to repeat that. That's in ancient texts and all the texts, and we know that. It's just time that we remember it and apply it for a change. And with that, I'm going to thank you. It was, again, as usual, incredible with you. And whenever you need me, your wish is my command. I'm there at the drop of a hat. That's not a problem.